Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to Sessions G Podcast. This is Gabriella Love. I am your host. Today we are back with another psychedelic session. This is psychedelic session number 5, and we have an amazing guest with us. I'm so excited to hear more and more about his experiences with psychedelics. I will let him introduce himself in just a moment. Before I do that, thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all the love and support. And I hope you enjoy this as much as I know we will. Ali, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me here, Gabby.
So my name's Ali, and I'm the founder of a new social networking app called Tapereel. And I was inspired to build this app because of actually a journey that I had taken to South America, where I got to have an experience psychedelic medicine and came back with a renewed sense of purpose in my life. And something that I wanted to do was create a platform that is more conducive to human connection and communication and dialogue and stuff like that. So
awesome. That's so cool.
That's a little.
Yeah, that's awesome. I like Tapereel quite a bit. I love the idea. I love the intention around it. And I hope that's going well for you. How's that going?
It's been a journey. It's anytime you start a business or a startup or a mobile app, it comes with its own set of challenges, a lot of learnings along the way. So far, obviously trying to launch a business in 2020 is also not easy, considering the economic challenges that people are going through and the sort of the shifts. But I think, we are better positioned now. We're rolling out new features, the ability for people to monetize. I think I'm feeling more and more confident as we're getting into 2021 about our direction and, the new folks that are slowly and gradually coming to the platform.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. That's awesome. Congratulations. So let's talk psychedelics. Let's start with what does that mean to you, psychedelics?
Well, to be honest, I don't like the term psychedelic. Mm-hmm. I guess it depends on what type of psychedelic you're talking about. Personally, I don't dabble in like synthetics. Mm-hmm. So anything that's like created in a lab or, put in a pill, those types of psychedelics are not my cup of tea. I prefer, like plant-based psychedelics that, in my opinion, are better coined as medicine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So psychedelics, in my opinion, are, when that's an experience that you go through because it affects your psychology and the way you maybe think, but the true impact comes from it medicinally.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at it as a medicine, it changes sort of the flavor of what its purpose is. A psychedelic could be something that you do at a party or a rave, or you're doing it for fun, right? Mm. While a medicine, you're going into it with a different intention, either for, healing, for, even spiritual reasons. And I find that, when you approach it that way, you get more out of it, as opposed to doing it for, partying reasons per se.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And I agree with you. I agree with that. I use the term psychedelics as well as plant medicine or sacred medicine or just plants, but interchangeably, yeah. Depending on, you know, who I'm talking to and what makes sense in that context or that conversation. But I'd love to know, so have you always had this perspective on them, or did that sort of change based on experiences that you had?
Well, you know, when I was young, it was more about doing it because it was something cool or fun, or, you know what I mean, to mm-hmm. have a good time. But even when I was doing it young, it was, you know, I always connected with it on a slightly different level. Mm-hmm. Like I liked being outdoors when I was doing it. Mm-hmm. You know, if I was doing it inside, I'd feel very like caged in and like almost like sometimes I would even have a bad trip. Mm-hmm. But when I was outside in nature, you know, I felt more connected to the spirit of the medicine of the actual plant. And the experience was, you know, drastically different. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I always felt that growing up. And then as I've gotten older, you know, now, when I look at psychedelics or plant medicines, for me, it is purely a spiritual path, a path of healing, or, you know, gaining access to like a different plane of information. Mm-hmm. And then having the ability to just download that information, as Terence McKenna says, right? Mm-hmm. When he's talking to the mushroom, it's like a download of information from the source mm-hmm. or the universe, right? And I've had some similar experiences like that. Like I remember when I had three children, had the opportunity to reconnect with some mushrooms. And it was a profound experience because I remember like going for a walk on this trail behind my house and thinking to myself, oh my God, like I got three children. Like that's crazy, mm-hmm. you know? And immediately I was overwhelmed with this feeling, like this information was coming to me saying, you have three right now, but you're going to have five.
Oh man. Oh man.
And it was like I had to stop in my tracks and just sit down and be like, oh my God, like what does this mean? Like, and that's essentially what ended up happening over the following years. And now I have five children. So
that's awesome. Wow. That's
yeah,
so cool.
Yeah. It's crazy how it's almost like they have like their own energy or something like that communicates with you. Mm-hmm.
That's so cool. So are you, just a sidebar, are you able to retain a lot of like those downloads that you have in some of these ceremonies or experiences?
Absolutely. Like I keep a diary and I write down like the things that I'm learning, mm-hmm. just so I don't forget them. I did that especially with my ayahuasca ones. And the thing with ayahuasca is that, you know, it's such a powerful teacher. And it really, you know, for me personally, I always felt a certain theme mm-hmm. with every ayahuasca experience that I had. So the first time, you know, it was sort of like, it was just explaining to me, you know, the idea of bliss. Mm. Maybe it's because I was feeling bliss during the experience, but you know, that was like the highlighted theme throughout that journey that, hey, you know what? You are bliss. This world is in a state of bliss, but we don't realize that because of our own egos, because of our own thought patterns, our own mental illnesses. We don't realize the miracle of life that we are living. Mm-hmm. And so that was like one theme. On another journey, like the theme was honor and everything related to honor that I could possibly think about from my personal life or experience was coming up as a reminder, like, this is what honor means. You know, when something comes into your life, honor it. When you meet people, even if you don't like them, honor them. You know, so that was like a very powerful theme. And each time I've kind of written out some of these lessons in a journal.
Do you?
And my hope is, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to ask, do you write it down during the journey or after?
Usually immediately after.
Okay.
Or the following morning. And I just feel inspired to write, and whatever I want to say just flows. It's interesting because the day following a psychedelic or plant medicine experience, it's like your mind has a clean slate, and everything is just flowing from a state of zen or flow. You know what I mean? It's a very different creative experience for me. Sometimes when I'm writing on a regular day, I might hit writer's block, or, you know, I'll have something that I'll try and perfect a sentence too much. But the day after a medicine experience for me, it's like, it just flows. And it's like nothing holds back the pen, and it just continues. So, I find it's the best time for me to write.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. I just came back from a ceremony with mushrooms the other day, and it was the first time maybe ever, that for me, I felt like I was actually able to be present to learn and also write it down. Like, this entirely new possibility opened up for me of being able to, like, hold space for myself to have the experience while also being able to relate it back to, like, the identity or the sort of, like, state of mind that I'm in when I'm not with the medicine. And so that was really, really cool to be able to just, like, write things down as it's happening. Super cool. Super cool.
Yeah. I mean, the only struggle I would have is actually doing the writing, because, sometimes your ability to concentrate or focus is a little bit challenging. So I applaud that you were able to write during the experience. But for me, it would just be like chicken scratch. Like, I wouldn't even be able to piece the ideas together. But, I tend to retain them differently, and then doing it after the fact, I find it's easier for me. But
That's really awesome. I mean, like I said, that was the first time I was ever able to do that, so it's not as though I've been doing that for a long time. But I find, like, so what's your process of retaining information? Because for me, the only way for me to retain it, the method that I use, is to sort of like, if there is a particular train of thought or a lesson that I'm learning or seeing or an understanding that's happening, I kind of hold that understanding in focus by repeating it to myself. It's kind of like when you're learning something and then you write it down in order to, like, you know, you're kind of repeating it to yourself through writing. That's sort of my method of just, I repeat the things to myself, and the more I repeat it, and it's not like repeating means repeating it five times. It means repeating it in a way where I am kind of storing it on different levels of, like, my memory bank. And kind of like creating that path of, okay, there's a memory bank that's sort of far away in my unconscious, and there's one that's closer to my conscious mind. And so I work my way through to my conscious mind so that I'm also storing it there, so that when I need to recall it, now it's a little closer and a little more accessible. And I know how to find it because I've been, like, repeating it and kind of, like, creating this path to it. So what's your method of retaining? How do you retain that information?
Well, similar to you, I mean, I also repeat it. And the other thing is usually the information is so profound that it's hard for me to forget. Mm. Like it's so fundamentally new. It's such a different perspective that it's like, it kind of wakes me up to it. It's like, oh, I didn't look at this way. And so just having that new perspective is easier for me to retain. The other thing, aside from the writing, sometimes what I do is I record a voice memo. Mm. So I find that easier. Like I'll just, you know, press record and then whatever's coming to my mind or, you know, that I want to say or retain, I'll just say it and then play it back the following day. And then I can, you know, write it out or bring some more cohesion to those thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Beautiful. Beautiful. Okay. What plants or medicine do you work with? Has that changed over time? Has it been the same for quite some time? Do you have a go-to?
Well, when I was young, in high school, everybody was doing cannabis. So that was one thing that kind of opened the door for me. Mm-hmm. But I never had a good relationship with cannabis. It was like, I felt like it really hampered my learning ability at the time. Mm-hmm. And it made things difficult that way. Like my grades started to fall and everything. Some people, obviously, like I used to know, I knew a guy who went through university, you know, being a pothead every single day, and he got straight A's, like everything. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So it definitely impacts different people in different ways. And for me, it was like, you know, it made it difficult to concentrate. It was during high school, I think, that I started experimenting with magic mushrooms too, a few times. But again, it was, you know, when you're young, you don't understand it mm-hmm. the same way as when you're older. And then, you know, I went through a period of my life where I never touched any of this stuff, almost a decade. Like I was like, you know what, I'm done with it. I'm not going to do it. Mm-hmm. And then when I got older, after I got married is when I reconnected with the mushroom plant in a different way. Mm-hmm. And then a friend of mine basically went down to South America and had experience with ayahuasca at a retreat. And he came back and started telling me about it. Interestingly, when I was very young, I remember thinking to myself that, you know, it would be really cool to go spend time with some kind of shaman and work with them in the jungle or something like that. Mm-hmm. I remember having this thought when I was young, but I never obviously, you know, took the step to pursue it until after I got married. I was going through a period where I was, doing a lot of cannabis. I wasn't really happy. I had failed at my second startup. On the outside, I looked very successful. I had a house, I had a wife, kids, a couple cars. It was like mm-hmm. everything was good. I had a good job. But inside, I was not happy. And I felt like something was missing. That's what took me down to South America. And that's when I had the opportunity to connect with ayahuasca, which, in my opinion, is, you know, nothing compared to all the others, mm-hmm. the plant medicines out there. Even mushrooms is a very different thing for me. Ayahuasca is, as they say, the grandmother. It's just next level mm-hmm. in terms of what it teaches you. And then I've also, when I was down in South America, I had the opportunity to connect with San Pedro, mm-hmm. which is a cactus. It's also similar to peyote, and it has a very masculine energy. Mm-hmm. Ayahuasca is a very feminine energy. So oftentimes when you take ayahuasca, they recommend taking the polar opposite, which is the masculine side of it, to kind of create that balance within you. Mm-hmm. That's been my experience. Now, personally, I think if well, whenever I do experiment with psychedelics or plant medicines, I'm very cognitive about the set and setting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't like doing it randomly or for whatever reason. It has to feel right. The day has to go right. And I have to have some specific intention behind it, either to heal or to ask a question or to seek some kind of answer.
Mm-hmm.
But more recently, I've kind of stepped away from it and, just using it as an opportunity to just connect with the body in more natural ways,
mm-hmm.
And my mind. I'll do more like meditations or shamanic drumming or even just prayer as a way of, connecting.
Yeah. And all of those are just as effective in my opinion. I mean, there's a lot, I think, since having, been in ceremony, in a ceremonial sort of setting with plants, I now realize that there's a huge difference in the experience, as well as in experiencing the environment and myself and the plant itself when it's in a ceremonial setting. There's something just amazing and effective about the ceremony itself. And I think that even without the plants, without ingesting the plants, you can still have the same effects in ceremony. Because a lot of them
absolutely
is in ceremony.
And that's what I love about ayahuasca, is because it is a very ritualistic and ceremonial experience.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something you go to Burning Man to do, right? There is a lot of respect that, is given to the medicine, a lot of attention to detail, a lot of, rituals that take place. It just creates that, that sense of sacredness mm-hmm. and intention. And I feel like we as a society, have kind of eliminated that from our day-to-day life.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to lose touch with what's sacred and what's really, truly important. We kind of get caught up in this, the cycle of, it could be, social media or, Netflix or keeping up with the Joneses and, the societal pressures that we all used to feel prior to 2020. I felt like I was even detached from the sacredness of life because of this rat race that I found myself in.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
And these medicines basically help, and the ceremonies help me reconnect with that sacredness.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to reconnect with that spiritual side. Of myself.
Mm-hmm. So just a question. This is kind of two questions at the same time. So what I think, we're just going back for a little bit here. So you mentioned ayahuasca, it has a very feminine energy or quality to it. And then San Pedro has a very masculine energy. I haven't had any ceremonies with San Pedro, so I'm not familiar with the experiences, I don't think. But I am very curious as to what does that look like or feel like when you try and describe the feminine versus the masculine energy as it is presented to you through these medicines. Like what is the distinction there? How does that feel for you?
Well, they call ayahuasca the grandmother for a reason. Mm-hmm. It has a ancestral kind of vibe to it. It's it does feel feminine because it heals you, it nurtures you. It's kind of like the mother, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like going back into a womb and feeling that sense of nurturing and kindness and love that you would get from a a feminine being. And then the San Pedro, which they refer to as the grandfather, is more around lessons, the way a father might teach a child a lesson. It's very, it's more focused on the heart. Mm. It actually, the heart chakra is, ripped open during a San Pedro ceremony. The first time I did it, I remember, we woke up at 6 a.m. We went around a fire in a maloca, and no breakfast, nothing, and we just started drinking San Pedro medicine all the way until 5 o'clock in the afternoon, evening. Mm-hmm. And in the beginning, it's like you just drink it and you kind of you're listening to the songs, the ceremonial songs, and you're around the fire. But then there comes a point in the medicine where you suddenly feel like your heart chakra, your emotions are just opening up, and it happens uncontrollably. So for myself, I remember very distinctly just sitting there and suddenly having this urge to just cry. And it was not like just a simple cry. It was more like a weep, an outpouring of emotion that, perhaps was just built up inside of me over the years. And I was allowed to just let it all out. And during that time, the memory of my grandparents was very significant for me. And just the lessons from my parents growing up about, the importance of relationships and, especially your family relationships, the importance of spirituality and being kind to people and the world and the universe. Sometimes we lose sight of those lessons, and that medicine really highlighted those lessons for me. It's I felt like a child again, but it was transformative. Mm-hmm. It was powerful, powerful. Mm. Because he was talking at the time, and he was talking about water. And he went on, he must have gone on for 15 minutes about water. Now, San Pedro is a cactus. Mm-hmm. And as you know, cactuses can survive in a desert without water. Mm-hmm. So by him talking about the importance of water in life, the importance that it plays, qualities of water, how it can overcome obstacles and go past things, how it's fluid in nature and always changing and never, stuck in its ways. And he was saying prayer about, people around the world who don't have water, and he was praying that they could find fresh and clean water so that they could live and sustain themselves. And he just went on and on about water and water and water. And then for me, it was like I felt like the water within me in the form of tears was starting to well up, and it just, gushed out at that point. During that ceremony, the process was that we were all sitting in a circle. I think there was about 20, 25 of us. Mm-hmm. And they went clockwise, and each person basically had to come and sit in front of the fire on a cougar skin, mm-hmm. which had been hunted, and it was laid out in front of the fire, and the person had to come and sit and kneel on that cougar, and basically the shaman would say, okay, well, what's your purpose? What are you here for? Mm-hmm. And why are you here? And then the individual would explain something, and under the influence of the medicine, like it just highlights emotionally or psychologically what has been bothering you, and you come there to resolve it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a powerful experience because, you know, we got to witness each individual person's story, trials and tribulations, and, you know, why they were there. And then also in that process, the shaman would, you know, give his advice and explain, you know, how the person could heal from it,
mm-hmm.
or give some perspective that maybe, you know, you were not aware of. And so just seeing everybody go through that process was also very powerful, and a great learning experience.
Mm-hmm. So cool. So beautiful. So this is a question I like to ask people. Are you more of a, when you have these ceremonies and you're with plants, are you more of a visual person? And by that, I mean, are the experiences more visual or is it more physical sensation, a combination of both? What is it like for you?
I think it depends because it depends on how well you practice the diet prior to the ceremony. Mm. So before an ayahuasca experience, they have this thing called the dieta,
mm-hmm.
I guess, if I'm pronouncing it right. And essentially, before I participated in the ayahuasca ceremony, the diet included no salt, no sugar, no caffeine, basically any sort of flavoring that you could imagine, just take it out of your food. So you could only have like rice, fruits, vegetables, or something that was steamed.
Right.
And so they recommend doing that for 2 to 4 weeks prior to your ayahuasca journey.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did that for 2 weeks, and it was amazing because I felt so cleansed during that process. I felt so calm and connected. I just felt like there was no stimulation,
mm-hmm.
you know, external stimulation in my body in terms of flavor or any psychological dependency on food.
Mm-hmm.
None of that. It was a clean slate where I could just connect with who I am and what I was feeling and thinking in any given moment in time.
Mm-hmm.
It was, you know, I think it's the most important part prior to participating in these journeys or ceremonies is the diet. And by doing the diet, you know, the visual experiences are heightened
mm-hmm.
as a result of it because your body is so cleansed and it's less acidic, like your pH levels are balanced, and so the medicine works with you differently. But there have been times where, you know, I was a little bit laissez-faire with my diet and had some salty foods or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and the visuals maybe weren't as strong. The lessons were still very powerful.
Right.
I still felt everything. I still went through a purge, but maybe the visuals were not as heightened.
Mm-hmm.
So I think diet plays a huge role, and that it prepares you not just physically, but psychologically and spiritually for that experience.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes that much more powerful as a result of it.
Yeah, that's cool. That's very interesting. I wonder if a lot of people know that about like the interplay or the relation of diet and the visual sort of experience or element. I certainly did not think about it in that way. But I also, I have to say, I, for whatever reason, I am very, very sensitive and visuals are come very, very easily for me. And it's something that up until very recently, it was something that very much felt like out of my control. Because that's sort of my, that's just the way I happen to experience things or react. It all becomes very, very visual for me. And so, like, for me, the process, it ironically has been about learning to be present to the visuals and hold space for them while also, you know, returning to the body and hold space for the body. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure for some people, it's the opposite. It's about learning to, you know, hold space for the body while also opening up to visuals or experiences like that.
Yeah. I mean, with ayahuasca, for me, it's about keeping the eyes closed, mm-hmm. being in a dark and comfortable place. But for mushrooms, you know, as I mentioned, I like being outdoors. But, you know, Terence McKenna is known to say that you should be in a dark room with mushrooms as well. I believe he talks about the heroic dose, which is like 5 grams of mushrooms in a dark room all by yourself. Mm. No music, no outside stimulation. And that's, according to him, that's where you get the most out of the medicine.
Mm-hmm.
But the visuals, you know, they're it's almost like they're fun to watch as you're going through the experience. Mm-hmm. You know, I enjoy the visuals. And, you know, so I always try and make sure that I practice the diet, because it just helps with the visuals for me personally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It seems to me, in my experience, that the visuals, at least for me, they tend to change depending on, like part of the kind of time frame you're in. So at the very beginning of, you know, the medicine beginning to work in my body, there are very specific kinds of visuals that happen. And then as time goes mm-hmm. on, those visuals change based on what the experience is in that particular moment, during that, like, I don't know, 8-9 hour period. So it's like, it's very different visuals depending on like what hour of the day or night it is. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. You're absolutely right. The other thing I find about, mushroom as a medicine, it's very auditory for me. Mm. Like, it's a very auditory experience.
Interesting.
I feel like I experience the world in terms of like sound waves.
Mm.
I can project my voice very differently on mushrooms than my regular voice. Mm. Music is, like, especially like raw music, like a piano or a guitar, is very intense in terms of the sound waves that it produces. And so, you know, it's kind of true, because sometimes people will have an experience on mushrooms, and the way they describe it is that it's like they see everything as breathing.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's like in movement, like a tree. You could visualize it breathing. You know, you can visually see things as if like the wall will seem like it's like also breathing. So it's interesting how each medicine is kind of like a different insight into how the world kind of works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it really is. It really is. I know for me, with mushrooms, that it took me over a decade to really understand some of those experiences I've had, and to really understand the mushroom or just be open to a new understanding. And now the way I see it now is that there's a when it starts to work in my body, and it starts to, like, I'm now opening up to being able to see the plant and communicate with the mushroom, it's almost as if it starts to come up, and as it's coming up, it's actually helping me sort of build out the pattern to be able to see the mushroom. It's like there's this reality that we're living in now, and it's difficult for me to see the mushroom on that plane. But as it starts working through me, it's actually building up that pattern of that dimension or that plane, and it's kind of like doing that gradually and slowly. And at some point, you know, I can see the mathematical pattern of that, and then now I'm now transported into that consciousness or that plane. It's difficult to just talk about these kinds of things because it for me it feels like I don't know what you know which of the words in our dictionary makes sense for any of this stuff. I don't know if I should be using a word like plane or dimension or you know like I. It's the only way I could describe it is just it's like it shows me the mathematical formula or whatever pattern I need to know in order to actually be able to see the mushroom or to you know invite it in or to be present with it. And that's a really cool process, but it took me a decade to understand that.
Mm-hmm. You know, the other thing about mushrooms is that it's almost like it connects, well, for me personally, it connects me to my primal brain, you know, my gorilla brain, my monkey brain. And when I'm on it, I literally feel like I am, you know, a Homo sapien that evolved from, you know, or like has that connection to this primal side of myself, this monkey brain. So that's what I have noticed the past few times that I've done it. Prior to that, it was very different. But more recently, it's like, and, you know, it's a very body-centric experience. You know, like I'll look at my hands very differently. You know, I'll use them even very differently. Like if there's times where I'll play the piano and my fingers will move so fast that, you know, I'm unable to do that, you know, in my day-to-day reality. I can't move my fingers as fast. But it's like it gives you like this charge in the brain that allows you to use your body very differently.
I can see that the using the body differently definitely. I mean, for me, the mushroom plant is what for me felt like an activation of my hands. I think prior to specifically the mushroom medicine, I mean, I'm not aware of it. Maybe I was, but I didn't know that I could do things with my hands. You know, it's the mushrooms that taught me that I could do things with my hands, and taught me in such a beautiful way. And my body, even, it's just so many beautiful teachings, truly, that these plants offer us. Have you thought about or looked into, or do you spend time looking into the science behind these plants?
Well, I mean, I do read up on it. So I know that ayahuasca, obviously, when it's broken down, is a very DMT experience. San Pedro and peyote is, the primary ingredient is mescaline, which works in the body differently, and then mushrooms being psilocin or psilocybin. I'm not a chemist per se, so I read it just to kind of understand, you know, okay, well, how is it working, or how does it work? But one thing, you know, I think is important and sometimes can get overlooked is when you go through this experience, it's important to really be gentle on yourself afterwards. If you're going to go to work on Monday morning after a night of that. Like it you're not going to be in a good mindset. You won't be able to integrate it. You won't be able to process everything properly. And so it's really important to be gentle on yourself for a few days after, you know, drink lots of fluids, you know, do things that you'll enjoy and, you know, just gradually work your way back to, you know, normalcy in life. Otherwise it can also be or turn into a very negative experience. Mm-hmm. And there are examples, I think, of people who have, you know, worked with these medicines the wrong way and it's affected them psychologically. You know, they've had more trouble connecting with people after the fact. So, you know, it's while you and I are having this amazing conversation about it, I think it's also important to put a word of caution out there to people who are thinking about this kind of stuff mm-hmm. or experimenting with it, to, you know, make sure that they do it in the right set and setting and, you know, have some kind of support network that's around them after the fact that can help them, you know, work through it and maximize the learnings and the teachings that you get from it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so great that you brought that up. That's definitely very important to talk about and to remain aware of. It's great that, you know, there are many lovely experiences to have, and it certainly they are amazing teachers that offer amazing teachings. And there's also, yes, the not being intentional or preparing for it, or, you know, ensuring that you've got the right setting or that you are in the right place emotionally and mentally, and you are showing up with an intention and really ready to work with that intention and work through it. Like, there are different factors that will either make it a very easy experience or a very difficult one. And, you know, after mm-hmm. after the ceremony, that may or may not extend into, you know, the days or weeks or even months after. So yeah, that's definitely very important. I know for me, you know, I mean, this is like, this fear doesn't go away. Like, whenever I'm about to participate in a ceremony, I'm just as scared as I was the other time, even though, you know, I know that I came out of the other ceremony with such beautiful teachings, and it was beautiful and it was just amazing, even if it was a difficult one. But I'm still scared every single time. I'm still, you know, uh-oh, well, what if, you know, I don't know. What if it just it doesn't go well today? Or what if it doesn't? And for me, right. like, a lot of that fear comes from, like, I can trace all of those fears back to one fear, which is I don't want to lose my sanity. I, like, my fear is just mm-hmm. I don't want it to, you know, trigger some sort of switch in my brain. And then, you know, I'm never able to come back to reality, or at least to this version of reality. And that's a fear. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, I assume that's a fear that a lot of people have. And that's fair. That's reasonable. You know, because you are about to potentially have an experience that's life-changing and transformative, and you're about to access information or consciousness that you don't have access to in you know, in your day-to-day, and that might, you know, that could potentially change things for you. I'm saying I don't know if it's possible that will happen. What I am saying is that it's reasonable to be afraid of that.
Absolutely. And, you know, the thing about these medicines, well, let's look at the mind. I mean, we've got our conscious mind that allows us to work on a day-to-day basis. We've got our subconscious, and then we've got this thing called the ego. Mm-hmm. And the ego is probably the root of all the problems that we have or face in our lives. And what these medicines Well, the other thing about the ego is that it provides us with a sense of identity, who we are, you know, what are we doing, how do we pursue things or face life on a day-to-day basis. A lot of it is determined by that ego. And these medicines essentially remove the ego from the equation and allow you to see life and yourself and have this experience very differently. And you know, oftentimes they talk about this in the psychedelic community as well, as this idea of ego death. And of course, nobody wants to die, right? And just having this thought that who you are from an egoic standpoint is now about to die so that you can have this experience is difficult, because you don't want to let go of it. You've identified with it. You're, you know, it's who you are. And it feels like, well, I don't, you know, there's a fear of letting go of that in that process. And, you know, I've had that too, like, you know, that anxiety when you're about to take it and you feel the changes coming on and you're like, oh boy, it's coming, right? Like, it's obviously, it starts with the nausea. And so you're working through the nausea, but then, you know, slowly and gradually, like the layers of the onion of your ego are being peeled away so that you can truly connect with who you are and then find healing in that process. Because I like to describe it another way, is like, it's like holding a mirror up to your soul without the ego stepping in front of it, right? So you see yourself for who you truly are, as opposed to this made up version of who you think you are in your mind. Yeah, so, you know, the process of ego death is, it's not easy. Every single time it's a challenge, even for myself.
That's such a beautiful way of putting it. It's such a beautiful way of describing things. It's a great perspective to have and to carry within ceremony and before and after. Because if you like using this perspective that you've just shared, I could look at any of my ceremonies and I could say, well, yeah, like any of the discomfort, a lot of the discomfort that was happening at any given point in time came from me resisting letting go of my ego or my egoic identities or my egoic beliefs around things, my egoic perspectives on things. I was resisting letting them go because, you know, I want to hold on to them and I want to, like, you know, my ego wants to say, no, this is real. This is true. You know, this happened, you know, or like you were hurt. You gotta hold on to this thing. You were hurt, or, you know, this isn't good. This is bad. You know, it wants to just hold on to those. It doesn't want to let them go. And so the more I hold on to them, the more I'm sort of keeping that as part of the experience that I'm having. Whereas when I release them and let them go, now, you know, they float away. And, you know, now there's a space for just being present to the truth and the authenticity. I think that's a really beautiful way of describing it. And thank you, because I'm going to use that next time I'm in ceremony. I am going to specifically, you know, focus on, okay, release this ego, release this egoic, yeah. Release this one, you know, because that's all it is. It's me holding on to egoic, you know, tendencies. Let it go, release it. But that said, so then if we kind of go back to, let's say there's a scenario where someone is in ceremony and, you know, they've had a ceremony, and after the ceremony, now they're having trouble returning to normalcy. They're having trouble returning to their sort of egoic identities. They're having trouble returning back to reality. They're just having trouble readjusting to life or finding their way back to themselves or their life. How does that ego death play into that? Do you think that maybe during the ceremony, they let go of all, you know, there was a very profound ego death, and now they just don't remember how to regenerate ego for themselves to kind of ground back, or is something else happening? What do you think?
Well, it's all about the reintegration. It's like putting yourself back together, but you want to make sure you're putting the right pieces back together and not just recreating yourself all over again. You have to understand that you have gone through a significant, you know, change, a process. You've now seen things that you never saw before. Mm-hmm. And so how do you now live with that? And moreover, you know, the fact that you live in a society where everyone is driven by ego. And so you're surrounded by people who have not seen what you've seen, and you have to be able to integrate with them, you know, with some sense of normalcy. And that's the challenge. And it's all about the integration. The post work is probably the most challenging and impactful in terms of long-term results, is going back into society and being able to see the egoic patterns in other people and being okay with it as long as you're not recreating those patterns in your own life. But then working with them, you know, I remember prior to these experiences, like if I was on the road, I would get angry, like, you know, road rage, somebody cuts me off and it's like, oh my God, oh, you cut me off. Okay. I'm going to honk my horn, or, you know, I'm going to start tailgating you. Like, these are all egoic responses that people have to daily life situations. But then after going through this experience, I remember somebody cut me off. I'm like, okay, you know what? Maybe he's got somewhere more important to be, and he has to be there. So let it be. Like, I don't have to react to it. I don't have to get pulled into the drama every single time. Right. So you kind of, it's important to then look at the world with a different lens and integrate it in a positive way that's helping you grow as an individual and understand, you know, the old patterns and then replace them with new patterns. One way I like to describe it is, like, I don't know if you're old enough to know this, but in 1995, when Windows 95 used to be around back in the day, computers would start to slow down because the memory of the computer would like fill up, and then you would have to run this program called the defrag, which is like it's a way of defragmenting your memory drive. And then Windows would basically go in and you know, reallocate the memory and create more space and efficiency so that your computer would start running faster. And that's the analogy I like to use for our brains. We are being inundated with information, especially in modern times with social media and media and our exposure to technology. We're getting all this information from around us that our brain is just kind of like almost fragmented with these pieces of information. And then this medicine kind of like says, okay, I'm going to take all this data and reprocess it and organize it for you in your brain so that you can make more sense of it. So, and then whatever's not needed, okay, like, you know, just purge it.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I guess the hope is that we do that as we sort of come back to this reality, and in the days following a ceremony, that we're doing that efficiently.
Exactly. So if your memory is now, your hard drive is now cleaner, it's created space for the new patterns to come in. And so you have to develop those new patterns as part of your integration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 Wow. Yeah, man. Thank you so much. This was so beautiful. Thank you.
it's been a wonderful chat, and it's great that we got to talk about it on such a deep level. I usually don't get to have these type of conversations.
So yeah, well, yeah, it. My pleasure. You're welcome to come back anytime. Do you have any final thoughts that you'd like to part with?
Having gone through these experiences, if I could go back in time, I would not want to do these medicines. But I feel like I was, on a negative path or negative thought patterns, a negative cycle. And the way I see it, like, these medicines kind of helped recalibrate everything and allowed me to move forward.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not something that, I advocate to be doing on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. I think it's important to understand when you may or may not need it, whether it's physically, spiritually, emotionally, or psychologically. I am at a point now where I feel like I've experienced enough of it. And now I just want to be able to connect with my body through more natural means to bring about those sensations or those learnings as naturally as possible, as opposed to, trying to use psychedelics or these medicines as a gateway to enter those realms. I want to be able to enter it naturally. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I'm working on. I think, it's the intellect is so important. We gotta learn how to harness our natural instincts and intuition and all that stuff, and understand our bodies and how our minds are working, and being able to do it naturally, I think, is equally, if not more, powerful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know what? I thank you for sharing that. Thank you, thank you, thank you. That I completely agree with you. I agree with you 100%. For me, in my experience, and this is why I love my mind so much, because I have been able to access some very incredible places and experiences, without these medicines present or physically in my body. So I know from experience that is absolutely possible. It is absolutely doable. And it's my piece of advice to you is to trust yourself, to trust the process, because that mm-hmm. for me has been the key to really exploring the depths of my own mind. It's just completely trusting in my ability to know how to navigate it, and how to navigate to different places, and just really following my instinct, my mental instinct. And they are there, in my experience. They are there.
I love the word you used there, mm-hmm. trust. It feels like we live in a very untrustworthy world, mm-hmm. and just reconnecting with that idea of trust, I think, is so important. Not having self-doubt, trusting the process, trusting in yourself, and following your own instincts is so important.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I do want to mention is the, you know, the medicines work according to who you are and your own past experiences, your own past traumas, what you've been through.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had some very paranormal experiences, mm-hmm. Through these medicines as well. And if like kind of scary mm-hmm. paranormal experiences mm-hmm. where you can potentially invoke spirits or, have inexplicable things happen mm-hmm. around you that in your waking life you wouldn't be able to explain. Mm-hmm. Because everyone's experience is so unique, you don't know under which setting or, based on which trauma or whatever will create that, could have the potential to create that paranormal experience for mm-hmm. you. And so that can also freak you out in a really bad way. And if you're not ready to deal with it, it's very scary.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I know all about the scary moments. I'm personally well acquainted with those scary places. and they've also been blessings. But are you willing, before you go, are you willing to share one of these paranormal experiences?
This happened to me when I was in South America. Mm-hmm. On a follow-up journey where I got to spend some time with a shaman one-on-one and do some more deep medicine work. Basically, it was the first night that we were there. I arrived like 6 a.m. in the morning. He took me to like this outdoor pool. Mm-hmm. And we went for a swim just to kind of freshen up from, the long flight that I'd taken. And so we went for a swim, had a nice breakfast, and then I took a nap during the day. I read a book. I was reading some spiritual text prior to going into these experiences. Mm-hmm. The first time I was reading the Upanishads. The second time I was reading the Bhagavad Gita, which is a beautiful book. After the nap, I was reading this book. And so, in the evening when we went into ceremony, we were sitting in front of a fire and, we drank some medicine, and then it hit me really quick. And all I remember, it felt like I was on a roller coaster through space, mm. like just lights were like I was traveling. It felt like really fast and like light was just going past me. And then I remember, the shaman was like, I have to go to the bathroom. And so he left me.
Mm-hmm.
And after he went to the bathroom, I don't remember how long he was gone for, but I had the sudden urge to purge. And so basically I had a bucket and I purged. And after I purged, I felt so relieved. But I had this sudden urge to just recite these prayers that I learned growing mm-hmm. up. I'm a Muslim. I come from a Muslim background. So growing up, I learned about the Quran and different types of prayers and whatnot. So during that experience, I was by myself and suddenly I just felt this urge that I should just recite it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started reciting these prayers. And I finished reciting them and the shaman came back and he's like, "Oh, I heard you in the bathroom. What were you reciting?"
What?
It was, and I was like, yeah, I was just, because I was saying it out loud, and you, it's almost like you're singing it when you're reciting it. And so he was like, yeah, it was beautiful. Can you say it again? Can you do it again? And I was like, sure. You know? So I read it again. And after I read it, so his house was basically in like almost like a gated area. Mm-hmm. Okay. So to get into the house, to get into the property, like I had to come out of the car, open the gate, mm-hmm. and then he had to bring the car in, and then we had to close the gate. And all around was a cement wall basically surrounding the property. Mm-hmm. So there was no other way to get in other than through that front door gate.
Right.
And so I'm just to sort of explain. Suddenly I hear like, it's almost like this being from on the outside of the house, like land on his driveway. Mm-hmm. And it sounded like he was wearing slippers, mm-hmm. because all I heard was like slow, gradual, like tapping of the feet,
right.
walking towards the house. Okay. So this being, it sounded like he was very old, very ancient. And he's just like walking, and you heard his slippers slowly move and come up. And there were some steps that led to his front door, and we were just behind the front door by a fireplace. And so I heard each step coming up the stairs, and then there was a chair outside the door, and that person basically went and sat down mm-hmm. there. Okay. So I was like, okay, maybe, you know, his neighbor was coming to drop off something. Right. Like, I was trying to make sense of it in my mind. Mm. Like, I'm like, but how did that person get in? Because the gate is closed. So I would have heard the gate like rattle open. Mm. There's no way we could not have heard that. And I tried to make sense of it. I was kind of freaked out because I'm like, is he going to come in? Like, what's, you know, is the shaman going to get up and go answer the door because he's hearing it too or not? Like, what's going on? And, you know, I didn't make much of it, but I continued on with the ceremony, whatever. And then, you know, we closed the ceremony and went to bed. Now, what freaked me out was the following morning, the shaman, we were having breakfast, and he goes, by the way, Ali, did you hear anything last night, like during your experience? And I was like, yes, I did. Like, and then I told him exactly what I heard. Mm-hmm. And he's like, yes, I heard it too. And that's what, you know, blew my mind, because I was like, okay, I thought this was just unique to mm-hmm. me. But the fact that he heard it, you know, totally legitimized mm-hmm. it. And I asked him, I'm like, what do you think it was about? And he's like, well, you know, sometimes these medicines can open up gateways, and, you know, spirits, like you can have access to different types of spirits. So, you know, and then he described an experience where he was dealing with somebody who had a lot of trauma, and they invoked the, you know, a spirit there. But I, you know, when I think about this experience, and I told him this as well, I was like, well, prior to this happening, you know, what took place? I was reading these prayers, mm-hmm. and some of these prayers, like they were, you know, they're meant for protection. Mm-hmm. Like apparently when you read them, you know, God will send somebody down to protect right. you, or, you know, act like an angel, like maybe just like a guardian angel, mm-hmm. right? And so that's the way I kind of made sense mm-hmm. of it. But at the time, it was just like, I was like, I don't know what the heck is going on. You know, people walking up to the house, it was just very freaky.
Yeah. My God, that was such a cool story. That was awesome. Thank you so much for sharing that. That was such a cool story. And I totally like, I mean, it. I don't see why it's not possible. Those prayers were designed to invoke specific things. And it would make sense that you said the prayer. And so you invoked something that, or someone that showed up to protect you, or, you know, the ceremony. The
space. Yeah. And I never really understood the powers of these, like, of prayer prior to it, right? Like, it just reinforced, like, I truly understood, like, that was the teaching for me, is that, you know what? There is value in prayer, and there's a reason why human beings have been praying for eons and centuries, right? Like, there's... I just felt connected to this like ancient source of wisdom that has been passed on to man for ages. And yeah, like I, every time I think about that experience, it just like, I get goosebumps all the time.
Yeah. That's so cool. That was such a beautiful experience. Wow. Thank you for sharing. I'm sure everybody listening enjoyed that. I like to think of, people that sort of started religions, whether it's Christianity or Islam or Buddhism or any other religion, I like to think of them as mystics. They were, you know, they were mystics, and they were, this is my perspective on them, they were mystics, and they were they were working with the divine, or whatever you want to call that, call it source, call it God, infinite intelligence, whatever. They were working with that, and they were, you know, co-creating together with the divine. And, you know, that's why a lot of the things that were then written down and passed on are so powerful.
Well, I mean, even like the story of Moses, for example, going, you know, into a cave in a mountain, being there all by himself in a dark cave. Like if you were to do that, even today, you could easily have some kind of, you know, psychedelic experience naturally by being in the dark for long periods of time.
Yeah, of course. Sensory deprivation.
So it's total. Yeah. I mean, have you been in a sensory deprivation?
I have not. No, I have not. It's on my list.
There's some great places in downtown Toronto. If you ever want to check out, there's a place called Float Toronto. Yeah. It's on Queen Street. I've been there. It's unique. It's very different. But it's also very healing, and you come out of it feeling very fresh. Like it's almost like giving a reset to your senses. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that sounds lovely. It's definitely on my list of things to do. Well, thank you once again. I'm so appreciative. You're always welcome to come back. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did.
I certainly did. I know we had only half an hour booked, but we clearly went over. But it's always fun talking to you and connecting with you again, Gabby. I really appreciate you having me on your show.
And that was psychedelic session number 5. My God, I love that story at the end. I hope you like that. It was so cool to just listen to that story, and the footsteps and hearing the footsteps, and then, you know, by the end of it, the next day, it turns out Ali and the shaman heard those footsteps and felt like someone was outside the door. That's just so cool. I mean, that wasn't the only wonderful thing we talked about in this episode. We certainly had many lovely, lovely conversations. One long conversation. So cool. I'm still kind of thinking about that story. It's so cool. It brings me back to lots of experiences I've had that are certainly interesting, or paranormal, if you will. Thank you again for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed that. Until the next episode, stay safe, be well, and much love to you all.